Welcome to the Floor Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 9th of September, recording at 9:28 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, let's have a review of the week. Well, it's been a volatile one. In terms of Asian stock markets, maybe a little bit less volatility. We had mostly steady action in the Asian stock markets, not least amongst the ASEAN sector, and particularly Indonesia there, and I think also the Philippines. The China sector was softer. India had a good bounce, but had some small downside key day reversals here today. European stock markets have been underperformers, and big hits in here today with the German DAX down 4%. A number of markets were down 4%, including Spain and Italy. Very weak day. The UK FTSE index was an outperformer, but it was still down 2.35% today. And the DAX is testing its lows of this decline. Now, in the Americas, kind of Wall Street had been firm earlier in the week, but started to come off yesterday and was hit hard in here today, down 2.67% for the S&P 500. Brazil, which had bounced earlier in the week, down 3.2% here today. The Americas just soft generally. Against that background, well, let's see. First, long dated government bond prices. They weakened from their highs earlier in the week, steadied in the last couple of days. The U.S. 30-year bond is future is up over a point, currently 103, but still trading. The U.S. dollar, very strong, and particularly today, it's surged against the U.S. dollar index. Surged against the U.S. dollar index. And let me restate that, I get it right, third try. And the U.S. dollar index surged. And that was largely, though, because of the euro's weakness. And the euro is down to 136.63. So currency stories on the week. Weak euro. We had a very weak Swiss franc following the intervention by the Swiss National Bank, which pegged to the euro at 120. So that's weakening again here as the Swissie comes off, as the euro comes off. And the commodity currencies suffered some selling pressure in here today. But the week belongs to the U.S. dollar, in my view. Yen still quite steady, despite concerns over or rumors of a potential intervention encouraged by the new prime minister. Crude oil has come up early, but then backed off this week. And Brent is 87.20 here. WTI is at 87.20. And Brent, let me just get that. Don't want to make a mistake on that. I had seen it, yes, 112.5 for Brent. So steady early in the week, but weaker towards the end. Precious metals, it's been sort of a ranging consolidation week following a failure up near the highs by gold, and we're easier in here today. Not a lot, but gold is back at 1858.80. It had a very good day yesterday, as you may recall. Gave up a little bit of that today. Silver which also had a good day yesterday, but gave some of that up today, 41.66. Platinum is lower, 18.38, and palladium had the biggest hit in here today. That had just been ranging, a little bit easier within the range, and down $26 here today to 7.38 and change. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, there's one heck of a lot of nervousness going on in these stock markets, that's for sure. A lot of volatility. The focal point of concerns remains developments in Europe. And we had a blowout to the upside on those Greek bond yields here today amidst much talk of default. Flaherty, the Canadian finance minister at the G7 meeting, was trying to jostle Europeans, it seemed, into some form of action. I've led with an article quoting him, saying that Greece might have to leave the euro, or would probably have to leave the euro if they didn't meet their debt reduction requirements here. So a lot of anxiety over what is taking place in Europe, not for the first time. And Europe and the euro, the sovereign debt problems there remain the focal point of investor concerns. And while the solution is known and has been mentioned repeatedly in these audios, you move towards much closer fiscal union, there's been a bit of dawdling, to put it mildly, among the various European politicians and finance ministers. And again, speaking out of one side of the mouth to their electorates, thinking about the next election, and then talking more sensibly in terms of solutions in the meetings, or so it mostly seems. But the rest of the world's becoming a little bit impatient with this because they're encountering the fallout from this crisis. And they see it in terms of the impact it has on their markets. I mean, this is the main factor here behind Wall Street's weakness today, in my view. And they don't want any additional contagion here. So that's the rather unhappy situation here for Europe. I would expect some big confabs over the weekend, but they're going to have to deliver more beef. They're going to have to put some emergency programs in place to reassure markets. So these are continued wake-up calls. How many wake-up calls they need? Hopefully not too many more before we get some swifter action. And that would require some of the late in the year deadlines to be brought forward. If there's a will, any of that can be done. But there's a certain degree of ambivalence and denial, I would say, in the way Europe is proceeding with this crisis. And of course, there's no formal mechanism for dealing with this situation. The euro was launched on a wing and a prayer. Okay, I do think over the longer term that they will achieve the fiscal union. But again, as I've emphasized, they need to do that sooner rather than later. And while I think most countries would probably like to see Greece stay in, I've never assumed that the euro was a club that you could join but never exit from. But there would be a certain amount of chaos involved with any Greek departure, including complete default on their bonds, and that would hit the European banks, certainly hit UK banks as well, and probably beyond. Now, again, Wall Street had rallied earlier in the week on hopes of further stimulative measures. Most stock markets had rallied on hopes of further stimulative measures. But that doesn't gain much traction when there isn't any beef. Yeah, and so while it was unrealistic to expect Bernanke to say much yesterday, particularly as he was speaking before Obama's speech, and while Obama gave another very good speech, as Obama does, most of what he was proposing is unlikely to be approved by Congress. And so we still have a difficult political impasse in the USA, looking at an election 14 months out. So this is not a reassuring environment overall. But I think one of the biggest problems that's taking place is I had an interesting call today from a journalist in Moscow who wanted me to comment on a report. I think he'd said that J.P. Morgan produced the report. But it was talking about correlation of stocks. And the statistics, which I wrote down, which he quoted to me, was that last month, apparently, that the 250 biggest U.S. stocks in the S&P, determined by capitalization, the 250 biggest, had a correlation last month of 81%. Now, for the record, the historical average, again according to the source, is 30%. So, huge increase in correlation. And I was also told that it was the biggest correlation since October 1987, of course, when the crash of 87 occurred, when the correlation was 88%. So, on hearing that, I was then asked, did this mean that investors in the U.S. were no longer paying attention to corporate fundamentals and were just engaged in very short-term momentum trading? Well, I said immediately that I didn't think it had anything to do with investors. I said this is all about high-frequency trading. And we've seen other reports saying that, I mentioned these, I think, that high-frequency trading had accounted for as much as 80% of the volume last month. And this is an unhealthy situation, basically. You've heard me say that on many occasions, and I've written about it on 44 previous occasions, I noticed, when I did a search of the site. And I think this is not a healthy situation. Obviously, it has nothing to do with capital formation, which is why we actually have stock markets. But I also feel that it's predatory, it's front running, and I don't think you need the imagination of a science fiction writer to realize that this is going to end badly. And I think it's a bad influence already. And people are not reassured by a churning market environment. I think Fuller Money subscribers are a pretty robust lot emotionally, and they understand what's going on here. But this is not good. It's not going to broaden interest in stock markets. And do we want the Terminator machines to be in charge? Well, I don't. And I'd like to see the regulators crack down on it. And they've been very slow to do anything except just look perhaps at what is going on. But this is something that isn't confined to the U.S. market. And I'm sure you will have noticed the high degree of correlation that's taken place, particularly this year, among so many asset classes. And that is certainly going to continue, not on an every single day basis, but periodically we get dramatic increases in these sharp, choppy moves, I think, as long as the high-frequency trading machines are in charge. Now, what about this possibility that markets are in a bottoming area, and let me be very precise. This is a very tough, close call. And pick your day. On one day, it can look like, well, it's in with a chance, and on a day like today, you think, not a chance. Although not much of the criteria has been altered that we've mentioned. But first, in terms of defining terms, as to exactly what Owen and I mean, when I've said that there's a chance that the August lows were the region of a bottom area, I think that's exactly the way I described it. That means that even if those August lows were taken out, that if it was the region of a bottom area, it shouldn't go that much lower. In other words, you could take them out, but then it doesn't follow through, and then you get downside failure and back into the ranging pattern overall. I think the chances of that happening are, as I say, are in that 50% area, possibly even a little better for Wall Street. Less so for the European stock markets. The odds of that being the case for most of the fuller money themes, I think, are at least 50%. But that's conjecture on my part, and I say this is a very tough call, and I'm not betting on it. With trading positions, for instance. Now, if this is the region of a bottoming area, as I say, we shouldn't see Wall Street move too much below those lows, and that's going to be Wall Street's going to remain the most influential market. It has yet to break that progression of gradually rising lows within the current range, although it'd take another day or two to the downside, and it would alter that. Although not necessarily take out the August lows. Downside action would be a significant move, or downside reconfirmation of the bear trend would be a significant decisive break beneath those August lows. And it would do it with a dynamic and on volume, and it would maintain it. Conversely, if we are in a bottoming area, we can expect the shares that Owen have been writing about that are outperforming to continue outperforming. We can expect the ASEAN markets, at least three of which are to the left of their still rising 200-day moving averages, to remain very firm. We can expect the U.S. indices, particularly the NASDAQ, to push back up into its top area. Now, it's too close a call for comfort, in my opinion. I'll be guided by the chart action here overall. I do think stock markets have fallen back enough, they've compressed volume enough, so that investors who wish to, who want to add capital to the markets, can nibble in this environment. I wouldn't pay up, as I've said repeatedly. And some of you may prefer to stand aside in terms of new commitments. I think dumping portfolios of long positions that you bought for good reasons that are still largely intact, particularly if they're decent yielders, which we like so much in this cycle, I think selling at these levels doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Selling on the basis that you would like to buy back, I think you'd have to get a significant, really quite a significant decline to make that worthwhile. And then there's also the challenge to actually have the nerve to go back in when the markets do fall lower. So this is a tricky period still, to put it mildly. It's plays on one's nerves, even though you are, or we are, a robust lot. It's not so much fun. It is absorbing and interesting. And I think we need to expect a little bit more of the same here. And then you know all about September's reputation as a kind of a duff month. Okay, enough on that. What about these long-dated government bonds? Well, the yields are historically low. You really do have to believe that we're going to see nothing but recession and deflation to justify these yields. Now, I'm surprised that yields are as low as they are. I've said that on a number of occasions, and it's cost me a bit because I've got some short positions in there. If we get the stimulative measures, which a number of people are talking about, including U.S. Federal Reserve governors and former Federal Reserve governors, that European ministers or finance ministers are talking about, and that should push yields higher, as we have those long-dated government bond yields higher, as we saw in last October in anticipation of the QE2, which was introduced in November of last year, and as we saw in 2009 when there was this massive stimulus. So another stimulus, which would mostly be printing money, throwing it at various asset classes, would be good for stock markets. I've said before that I've never seen a stock market that didn't like a stimulus, and even the talk of a stimulus. And that would be bearish for bond yields, pushing them higher. In other words, we've seen that before, and I think it's quite logical that that would be the case. And I'm not in the utter gloom department here, although the debt problems are enormous, as you well know. Corporates are doing much better, but if we're going into recession, if then we can expect investors to discount a further decline in corporate profits than they have to date. That would extend the bear market. If we don't go into recession, then stock markets will hold up a bit better, and logically so. Currencies, I find it reassuring that the US dollar is rallying in here right now. And yes, it has occasionally some safe haven qualities, but there has been a lot of concern about a dollar collapse. That's never been Owens, in my view, as veteran subscribers will know, although we have pointed out repeatedly that the dollar was a soft currency, as is sterling, as is the euro. But the dollar is looking least bad of those three right now, and the euro is looking by far the most vulnerable, and that certainly makes sense in this context. It's really been quite remarkable that the euro held up as well as it did until very recently. But I find the U.S. dollar's firmness reassuring because the absence of a dollar crisis is, well, it's not a plus, but a dollar crisis would be another big problem we don't need. And that's not what the charts are indicating. So I find that reassuring, as I've said. In terms of precious metals, first among the commodities, gold and silver. Well, let's take gold first. You know that gold is overextended relative to its 200-day moving average. It is overextended to a point where previously within the cycle we've always seen mean reversions, and therefore I'm cautious about gold in the short term, in that I think it would be healthy for gold, and it's quite likely, given the previous history, that gold would get some additional ranging consolidation, and that could easily lead to some profit taking by leveraged players. Now, that's just the short term, and I don't think there's a big downside risk. But could we test the lows that we saw, what was it, 2-3 weeks ago? Yeah, sure. On a medium to longer term basis, I think gold will be higher, and perhaps considerably higher on a longer term basis. I think that we'll see it pick up again in the fourth quarter, if not sooner. But technically, it would be healthier to see gold just take a good breather in here, because it did get ahead of itself, as you can see on the charts. And silver, I think it'll be a good gold proxy, but it's also a little bit overextended relative to its MA. Platinum, we have high hopes for platinum in the fourth quarter and next year, first quarter. But it did not maintain the recent upward break for the year, and it capped that with a key day reversal, as incidentally did gold. And so I think we'll see it pull back a little bit further, and that should create another buying opportunity. The one that concerns me most is palladium, because it has been underperforming here, and it had the big downward dynamics within its current range. I'd give that one a miss in this environment. Other commodities. Copper gave up some ground in here today, back just under the $4 level. That's gave up a lot of ground. It gave down 14.65 cents. So very choppy. I think we'll probably see more of that overall. If stock markets weaken further, I would expect the correlation to pull commodities lower for the most part. Not necessarily precious metals, although that's a tough call. You frighten stock market investors enough, and they do sell gold as well. You saw that in 2008. If we're in a bottoming phase, then I don't think it'll be a big factor for gold at all. Gold will just continue the consolidation and then eventually break and run to the upside again. The grain and bean complex, which is hasn't done much this week, but it has been firm prior to. Really, the charts suggest that there's unfulfilled upside scope for rough rice and soybeans in particular. I think commodities will continue to attract bullish speculation, provided stock markets aren't falling too sharply. If stock markets fall quite sharply, then people will worry more about recession and slower GDP growth, logically. Last but not least, to go back to something I didn't mention in my opening or earlier comments on stock markets, there is talk that both India and China are moving away from their monetary tightening stance, or are reconsidering it. And that may be hoping. And let's see the beef, I would say, in terms of some sort of announcement. I can understand the reticence of finance ministers and central bankers in those countries to make such an announcement at this stage, because they're still concerned by commodity price inflation. But inflation data coming out of China today eased the official data. That's all we've got to work with. That eased a little bit from 6.5 to 6.2. It's eased a little bit in India, I believe, as well. But not so much so that governments are about to jump on the monetary accelerator. What would cause them to jump on the monetary accelerator would be a very sharp fall in commodity prices, and I don't think that would occur without a sharp drop in stock markets, and that would increase their likelihood of reversing tight monetary policies in the growth economies. So, that's pretty much the picture as I see it here today. Interesting. A difficult environment for trading, for sure. For investing, the best way is to nibble for some of the stocks you like. I haven't put any money into this market yet, but any additional move to the downside makes it more tempting. And on that note, have a terrific weekend. All the best.